Hey, welcome to Blackhawk Church. My name is Chris. I'm one of the pastors on the teaching team here at Blackhawk Church. Welcome to those of you who are listening to our podcast, those of you who are watching on a screen in one of the other venues. Maybe you're even in this venue at 6 o'clock tonight and you're watching on a screen. Or maybe you are watching at home. Those of you who are watching downtown at Blackhawk downtown, the Upper House. Those of you who are at Fitchburg at Savannah Oaks Middle School. And obviously those of you who are with me in this room right here. Hey, what do you think of my new shoes? You see these shoes? See these shoes right here?
Awesome.
And a shout out to my friends at the Bridge Church in Fresno, California for getting me these shoes, knowing that I would never buy a pair of shoes like this for myself. But I got a pair of socks that go with them. Can you see? Can you see that right there? Yeah. Yeah. Which reminds me of an announcement that I need to make right now. This could be the year. Yes, this could be the year that the Cubs win the World Series again. Of course, they won it in 2016. Last year, we had a great year, but at the end, we had a bad ending. Somebody beat us, and I can't remember who that team was right now, but I don't know, some team in Milwaukee, that kind of thing. Hey, can you imagine being new to Blackhawk Church right now and thinking, what in the world is he doing? Hey, so if this is your first time at Blackhawk Church, you've never seen me do this announcement. I've been doing this announcement for like 35 years now. There you go. You can talk to somebody and say, hey, what was that crazy guy doing? And they'll tell you I'm a crazy Cubs fan, so there you go. To get to know myself and my wife a little better, to know that we're crazy Cubs fans. Actually, I have a room in my house that's all decorated in Cubs stuff. We have a thing called Meet the Dolsons, and so you're welcome to come to our house if you've never been there before, but please sign up. Don't all come at the same time. That would be bad. We actually have people coming to our house tonight. All the site pastors do this. Daniel Owen at Fitchburg, you can sign up at the Fitchburg site to go to his house. At the Upper House downtown, Matt Metzger is the lead pastor. You can sign up and go to Matt's house. Or those of you at Upper House and those of you at Fitchburg want to come to my house, you're welcome to do that too. And so we do this thing called Meet the Dolsons, Meet the Metzgers, Meet the Owens. It gives people an opportunity to come over to our house and we just tell stories. You basically set the agenda when you come to Meet the Dolsons, and people ask questions, and we just say you can ask any question you want, and usually people ask about the same 10 questions pretty much all the time. People ask, like, how did you meet your wife and stuff like that? That's a pretty common question, and the funny thing happens is when my wife and I answer these questions, and they're the same questions, and we do this like once a month, something happens inside of us because then we start to tell these stories about how God has intersected in our lives. The God of the universe, you know, the God of heaven and earth, has kind of intersected with our little kind of mortal lives. And it just, you know, it's so powerful. When people leave, meet the Dolsons, I'm so excited, not because the people leave, but because... And it is a long day for me, actually, but I'm excited because my wife and I, we just bond through the whole thing. It's really it's really powerful because we are reminded of how God worked in our lives. Because over 41 years ago, my wife tried to sign up for a class at Indiana State University in Terre Haute, Indiana, and the class was full. Just so happened it was full. And so it just so happened, one of her best friends, a woman named Titsi, was standing in another line. That's really her name, Titsi. And Titsi said, hey, come over here, sign up for this class. And my wife wasn't interested in this class on world religions. My wife wasn't interested in that class. But she signed up anyway because her friend was in the class. And that's the class that I happened to be in. And I thought I recognized her from something that had happened 3 years earlier on our campus. And on September the 22nd, 1977, that's our romantic anniversary, more important than our real anniversary, I went up to her in the stairwell, and I said, aren't you the girl that used to work in the Erickson's cafeteria? And then she looked at me and she said, aren't you that athlete that used to make a mess with Coke and milk? And that's another story. When I tell that story and how God brought us together, and, you know, my wife's so powerful, such a powerful, I just get weepy thinking about it. I mean, unbelievable. And it happens all the time when I tell the story. And it reminds me of how God intersects with our, the great God of the universe. I have all kinds of intellectual reasons for believing in God. And I don't, I'm not afraid to go there. We do series on that kind of thing. But God also has a relationship with me and with my wife. And he's brought us together. Everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. Whether you're married or you're single, like my friend Julie, you have a story. God has intersected. He's kind of like come down. He's introduced you to someone who introduced you to Christ, or something happened. You listened to a podcast, you listened to a story, and all of a sudden you heard the gospel. Something happened, and everyone has a story. And when we remember those stories, it helps us stay on the right path. When we forget those stories, well, usually ends up in a mess. Today we're going to look at the story of two people who fell in love. It was a marriage made in heaven. It's obviously made in heaven. God brought them together. The question is, would they remember their story? Take your Bibles and turn to Genesis chapter 24. Genesis chapter 24. We're going through a series called This Is Us, as we look at the narratives in the Genesis, in the book of Genesis, about people who are just like us. As is true with all of the other talks in this series, if you'd like to learn more about this particular passage or how you can apply it to your life, you can always go to our Next Steps blog page, and that will help you. This is the third of six messages, and the last two messages, the first one by me and then the last one by Pastor Charles, were about this great person named, what was his name? Abraham. So he's like the father of our faith. And Abraham had a wife, and her name was Sarah, and they had only one child. And it's a miraculous birth because both of them too old to have children. And their one son's name was Isaac. Abraham, and then Sarah, and then they had Isaac. And Isaac was their only son, and all the covenant promises are going to come through him. So he's obviously special to Yahweh, he's special to Abraham, and he's special to Sarah. He did all kinds of things in his life, and his mother loved him, and his father loved him. And we're going to pick up the narrative now, this narrative about how Isaac met his wife after his mother has died. Sarah, who was special to Isaac, I'm sure, and he was special to her, she's just died. So there's only two people in the covenant right now. It's Abraham and Isaac, no women. And now the narrative will introduce us to this very special young woman. Genesis chapter 24. Abraham was now very old, and the Lord, now remember when it's capital L-O-R-D, that is the personal name of God, and his name is? So I'll use that when I see those words like that. Abraham was very old now, and Yahweh had blessed him in every way. He said to the senior servant in his household, the one in charge of all that he had, "Put your hand under my thigh. I want you to swear by Yahweh, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I am living, but will go to my country, my own relatives, and get a wife for my son Isaac." The servant asked him, "What if the woman is unwilling to come back with me to this land? Shall I then take your son back to the country you came from?" Make sure you do not take my son back there, Abraham said. No. Yahweh, the God of heaven, who brought me out of my father's household and my native land, and who spoke to me and promised me on oath, saying, to your offspring I will give this land, he will send his angel before you so that you can get a wife for my son from there. If the woman is unwilling to come back with you, then you will be released from this oath of mine. Only do not take my son back there. So the servant put his hand under the thigh of his master Abraham and swore an oath to him concerning this matter. Let's stop there. Now, what's the thing about putting his hand under his thigh? Okay, that's just a little weird. And most people that are Hebrew scholars say, well, it's actually not the thigh, actually. So it makes it even stranger. So remember, the Bible's not written to us. It's written for us, not to us. People in the ancient Near East knew what that meant, and scholars kind of wonder as to what that's all about. But the idea is it's very serious. Don't want to miss the storyline here, though, and that Isaac needs to have a wife, and he's not going off. No, his dad decides that he's going to take the initiative, and he's going to send his servant. And so he doesn't want, he's preached this about three times, he doesn't want Isaac to go back to his homeland. No, I don't want you to take him back there. No, he's got to stay here. Why is Abraham so concerned about Isaac not going back there? Why is that? Well, the text blanks here, doesn't tell us, doesn't say. But perhaps he's concerned for Isaac that maybe it's a good father. He's trying to protect his son. Maybe that's what's happening. Let's keep going. Verse 10. Then the servant left, taking with him 10 of his master's camels, loaded with all kinds of goods, good things from his master. He set out for Aram Naharaim and made his way to the town of Nahor. Let's stop there. How many camels? 10 camels. And this is where the narratives in the Old Testament are famous for squishing a lot of things into one sentence. He's compressing a lot of time and distance here because actually where he's going takes a long time to get there. Look at this map. So they're in Canaan. Now the homeland is back in Nahor. That's 500 miles. That would be like us walking from here to Cleveland, Ohio. So if you averaged about 20 miles a day in a large caravan, it's going to take you about a month to get there. So all this is compressed. So the servant is going back there with a caravan. It's got 10 camels and probably a lot of people with him, making his way back to Nahor, the homeland of Abram. Verse 11. He had the camels kneel down near the well outside the town. It was toward evening, the time the women go out to draw water. Then he prayed. All right, this is the first prayer in the Bible where someone asks God specifically for guidance. This is the first one. Yahweh, God of my master Abraham, make me successful today and show kindness to my master Abraham. See, I am standing beside the spring and the daughters of the townspeople are coming out to draw water. May it be that when I say to a young woman, please let down your jar that I may have a drink, and she says, drink, and I'll water your camels too, let her be the one you have chosen for your servant Isaac. By this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master. See all the details there? It's huge. I'm looking for someone who's going to be courageous enough to talk to a stranger and not only offer the stranger a drink, but then she has compassion for animals too and offer the camels? How many camels does he have? Ooh, 10 camels. Let's continue. Before he had finished praying, this is part of the story. This is part of the story. Like September the 22nd, 1977. This is part of the story. Rebecca came out with her jar on her shoulder. Okay, so she puts it up there. She was the daughter of Bethuel, son of Milcah, who was the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor. Oh my, this is part of the family. 500 miles, traveled, now this is a family. The woman was very beautiful, a virgin. No man had ever slept with her. That'd be very important for the covenant line. She went down to the, what does it say? She went down to the spring. Okay, so she filled her jar and came up again. So where they're talking, the spring is different from this. It's a path. The servant hurried to meet her and said, "Please give me a little water from your jar." "Drink, my lord," she said, and quickly lowered the jar to her hands and gave him a drink. After she had given him a drink, she said, "I'll draw water for your camels too, until they have had enough to drink." So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough, okay, ran back to the well, it's some distance away, to draw more water, and drew enough for all the camels. Ha, ha, ha. What? Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry. We're all from Wisconsin, right? So we don't, you know, camels, you know anything about camels? They drink a lot. On average, a camel drinks 30 gallons of water at a time, and they can drink that much in less than 15 minutes. So where she's going is like some down some path. She grabs some water, brings it back for one, how many camels? 10 camels. They drink let's say these are average camels. They drink about 30 gallons. So let's say her jar holds 3 gallons, okay? How many trips is she going to have to make for just one camel, okay? So that might be 10. How many camels? 10 times 10? 100 trips she's going to have to make. Water weighs about 8 pounds a gallon. So let's say she's carrying 3. I don't know, 25, 30 pounds she's carrying. She's not only beautiful. She's not only compassionate toward a stranger she's never seen. She's not only compassionate to animals in a desert. But she's strong as all get out. She's like a female athlete. I mean, she might be strong enough to, you know, play for Mark Johnson's UW women's hockey team. Did you know they're playing for the national championship today? Yeah, beat Minnesota. Let's go Badgers. Awesome. She might be strong enough to play for them. Here's the point. When I think of Rebecca, I think of someone who's like, she's courageous, she's strong, she's beautiful. She's like, you know, she'd be the kind of person who likes to be outside, backpack, you know, I can do anything, that kind of thing. That's what I think of. That's a lot of camels to feed. And she gives them enough water until they're done drinking. Oh my gosh. Verse 22. When the camels had finished drinking, see all the details in the narrative? The man, that's the story. You tell your story, all these narratives. The man took out a gold nose ring weighing about a beacon, 2 gold bracelets weighing 10 shekels. Then he asked, "Whose daughter?" See, he doesn't know whose this is. "Whose daughter are you? Please tell me, is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night?" She answered him, "I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, born to Nahor." This is like family. And she added, "We have plenty of straw and fodder, as well as room for you to spend the night." Then the man bowed down and worshiped Yahweh, saying, "Praise be to Yahweh, the God of my master Abraham, who has not abandoned his kindness and his faithfulness to my master. As for me, Yahweh has led me on the journey to the house of my master's relatives." Drop the microphone. Bam. Answer the prayer. Boom, boom, boom. Unbelievable. And she's beautiful. And she's like a young athlete. Oh my gosh. It's part of the family. 500 miles he travels. This is fantastic. So they go to her family. And then in Genesis 24, the story is basically told again to like her brother and father. And again, it's the story. And she tells the story. So then the question is she gonna wanna go back, leave her, go to Canaan? Is she gonna wanna leave her home where she's at and then travel 500 miles south to Canaan? Well, her dad and brother break convention and they decide to let her make up her own mind, which back in those days you didn't do. So they ask her. That's verse 57. Then they, that's her brother and father, said, let's call the young woman and ask her about it, if she should marry this guy she'd never met. So they called Rebecca and asked her, will you go with this man? I will go, she said. This is huge. So she's not only beautiful and she's not only compassionate, but she's a woman of great courage, a great courageous young woman. She's going to go with this man who's a stranger and all his camels and go back to Canaan to meet this man and marry him. And the narrative picks it up when the caravan now goes 500 miles and then reaches Canaan in verse 62. Now, Isaac now had come from Beer Lahai Roy, for he was living in the Negev. He went out to the field one evening to meditate. That's an interesting detail there, isn't it? As he looked up, he saw camels approaching. Rebecca also looked up and saw Isaac. Oh, this is for, boom. She got down from her camel and asked her servant, who is the man coming to meet us? He is my master, the servant answered. So she took her veil and covered her face, which is the right thing to do back in those days. Then the servant told Isaac all he had done, tells the story. Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother, Sarah, and he married Rebecca. So she became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Huh. I wonder why that's there. Huh. I don't know. He loved his mom. He was special to his mom, obviously, her only child. He missed his mom. Marries her. Come to my mommy's tent. You know, I don't know. Young man, you know, he's, you know that. Oh, just stop for a second. He's not a young man. He's not a young man. We learn that from the next chapter. He was 40. When he married her. Whoa. Now, see, he's 40 years old. He doesn't take initiative to go find a wife. His dad has to do that for him. Whew. And then when she finally sees him, he's meditating. That's nice. And he's hanging around his mom's tent, brings her to his mom's tent. He's a mommy's boy. Just reading the text. This guy married up. He married up. Oh my gosh, young, beautiful, courageous, athletic woman. And he loves her. Is this marriage made in heaven? Answer is, that's the story. It's the story. And they tell the story over and over and over again about how Yahweh just made things happen just exactly. I'm going to ask her this question, and then she's going to say this about the camels, and oh my gosh, it's the story. It's a marriage made in heaven. And they get married. Turn to the next chapter, verse 19. This is the account of the family of the line of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel the Aramean from Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac prayed to Yahweh on behalf of his wife because she was childless. Yahweh answered his prayer. Awesome. And his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled with each other within her. And she said, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of Yahweh. So she's making a direct inquire of Yahweh. Yahweh said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. Whoa, lots happening here. First, Isaac's a praying man. His wife can't have children. He prays, and God answers that prayer. And then the babies are inside her. Like, what's this happening to me? And Yahweh specifically says, well, you got two nations basically going on in there. And there's going to be a rivalry between these. And who's going to serve who? What does it say? The older will serve the younger. So it won't be the older on top, the younger, which is kind of against convention back in those days. You pick up the narrative in verse 24. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60? Well, just a second here. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them? Whoa, 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 whoa. How old was Isaac when he married Rebekah? And 60 when they have the kids? How long did he pray? 20 years he prayed. 20 years. Having children, big deal. He wanted her to have children. He prayed for 20 years. 20 years. Oh my gosh, he's gonna praise God and love those kids when they're born. So finally they're born. Verse 27. The boys grew up. Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents, you know, like where his mom lives, you know. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Whoa, 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 what's happening here? Who does Isaac love? Oh, he loves Rebekah. No, Isaac loves Esau. Why does he love Esau? Well, Esau was a man of the open country. He's a man that's courageous. He's the kind of guy that would go hunting. And, you know, he's somebody in Wisconsin, you know, hunts and takes the meat and puts it in the freezer. He's the kind of guy that you want to be around, man's man. He loved Esau. Esau was courageous, strong. Just like, who was courageous and strong when he met her? It was Rebekah. The very qualities that Isaac saw in Rebekah, he sees those qualities in Esau. Who does Rebekah love? She loves Jacob. What was Jacob like? He's a man who hung around the tents. He's a passive man. What was Isaac like when she married him? Huh. Each spouse sees something in the one child that reminds them of who they married. But their affections are no longer for each other. Their affections are now for those children. That's the seeds of dysfunction in a marriage. Bam. Let's read about that. Chapter 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son, here I am," he answered. Isaac said, "I am now an old man and don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your equipment, your quiver and bow, and go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food." There's a repetition of wild game and tasty food all throughout this thing. "I like those kind of things and bring it to me to eat so that I may give, what? So that I may give you my blessing before I die. Who's supposed to get the blessing? The older will serve the, do you guys remember that? The older will serve the younger. Who's the older? Esau. Jacob is supposed to get the blessing, but he's intentionally going to bless who? Esau. And he knows it's wrong. How you guys doing? Are you following along? He knows it's wrong. The reader knows it's wrong. Rebecca knows it's wrong. Jacob knows it's wrong. Everyone knows this is wrong. Where's Rebecca? She's gonna, come on, Rebecca. Verse 5. Now, while Rebecca was listening, thank God, as Isaac spoke to his son Esau, when Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebecca rushed in and rebuked Isaac to his face. No, it doesn't say that. What Rebecca said to her son Jacob, what? Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, bring me some game and prepare some tasty food to eat, so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die. Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me two choice young goats so I can prepare some tasty food for your father. Just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father to eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies. What's happening here? Why doesn't she just go in and rebuke? Hey, old man, you know what the Lord said to me. Why are you doing this? But she doesn't do that. She's kind of helping God out here. She hatches a plan. Verse 11, Jacob, now he knows all this is wrong, said to Rebecca, his mother, this is wrong. No, he doesn't say that. But my brother Esau is a hairy man. What? While I have smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing on my... He doesn't question the morality of the lying, just the feasibility of the whole thing. His brother said to him, his mother said to him, my son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say and go get them for me. Let's just stop the train for a second. Here's some lessons for our lives. Number one, a good start to a marriage doesn't guarantee a good end. Was this marriage made in heaven? The answer is? Yes. No, I didn't hear you. That was not very loud here. So we're all seeing this marriage is a mess right now, and you're thinking, well, you know, if it's a mess, well, maybe God doesn't ever want them to be together because, you know, they're not doing really good together. Answer the question. Does God want them together? The answer is, yes. He put them together. By golly. But it's a mess. It's a mess. Just because a marriage is made in heaven doesn't mean it's going to end up good. You got that? Because it takes work. It takes work. You got to nurture a marriage. It's like if you went to a store and bought a plant and brought it home. It's a beautiful plant. But you got to take care of that plant. You got to feed that plant. You got to water that plant, make sure it has the right amount of light. If it doesn't, then it's going to die. And their marriage is super dysfunctional right now. Second lesson for our life. Your kids can't come before your spouse. This is exactly what happens here. Narrative just hums along, and all of a sudden they have kids, and man, it's a mess. And the qualities that she liked in him, she sees in her son, and she goes after him. The qualities that he liked in her, he sees in his son Esau. Marriage is a union. There's nothing like it described in the Bible. It's one flesh.
And my relationship with my wife is the most important relationship that I have. I love my kids totally, but not like the love I have for my wife. And when you let your kids get in between you and your spouse, get ready for problems. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Third lesson for our life. When we try to help God out, we just make a mess of things. That's what she's doing here. Well, she knows he's blessing the wrong kid. You know, she knows that he's not supposed to bless Esau, so I'll just help God out here. Instead of doing the right thing and just confronting him and saying, you know what Yahweh said. Shouldn't do that. She kind of becomes she just starts manipulating. So what happens? Verse 14. So he, that is Jacob, went and got them and brought them to his mother, and she prepared, see this tasty food again, tasty food, just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took his best clothes of Esau, her older son, which she had in the house, and put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with goat skins. She handed to her son, Jacob, the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and said, my father, yes, my son, he answered. Who is it? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. That's a bald-faced lie. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing. Isaac asked his son, how did you find it so quickly, my son? Yahweh, your God, gave me success, he replied, bald-faced lie, blasphemy. Then, verse 21, Isaac said to Jacob, come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not. Jacob went close to his father, Isaac, who touched him and said, the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau, so he proceeded to bless him. Are you really my son Esau? He asked. I am, he replied. Then he said, my son, bring me some of your game, you know, the tasty food, so that I may give you my blessing. Jacob brought it to him and he ate, and he brought some wine and he drank. And his father Isaac said to him, come here, my son, kiss me. So he went to him, kissed him. When Isaac had got the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, ah, the smell of my son. It's like the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you heaven's dew and earth's riches, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you. Peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and may those who bless you be blessed. It's a mess right now. It's a mess. You guys following the story? Esau then comes back. He finds out what his mom and brother had done, and he's fired up, hot mad. And he says, after my dad's dead, I'm gonna kill you, Jacob. Rebecca hears that and says, oh, no, 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 no. My favorite boy is gonna be killed by my other son. So she sends Jacob off, and just for a little while, I'm gonna protect you. I don't wanna lose both of my sons in one day. So she manipulates the situation, and Jacob leaves, and he's not gone for a little while, he's gone for 20 years. He never sees Rebekah again. And she drops out of the pages of the Genesis narrative just like that. All the patriarchs are polygamists except one, Isaac. He's the only monogamous one, and his marriage is a total disaster. Why? Why? They forgot the story. They forgot the story. God brought them together. And when we forget the story, when we fail to remember, it's a mess. For those of us who are married, have a date with your husband and your wife. Tell the story again. Tell the story. Look each other in the eyes. Tell the story. God brought you together. No matter what kind of situation, no matter what kind of problems you're going through, go back there. Remember the story. For those of us who are parents, remember the story when our kids were born. Tell the story. For those of us who are single, tell the story of how God has intersected in your life and he's brought someone special into your life to share the gospel with you. Tell the story about the way God has moved in your life and intersected. Tell the story. The God of heaven and the God of earth is not just the God up there. He's the God down here, and he intersects with us. And when we remember that, we stay on the path. When we fail to remember, it just makes a huge mess. Let's pray. Father, I pray for all of us, people who listen to the podcast, people who are watching online, those of us in this room. We all have a story. Everybody has a story. We're all on a journey. But we're so busy. We're so busy with all kinds of things. We forget to remember how you have actually got involved in our mortal lives. Oh, forgive us for that. And help us to remember and tell the story and draw us back to you. We pray this in Christ's name and for the sake of his reputation. All God's people said.